This Sunday, the Great Play series of the National Broadcasting Company presents The Merry Wives of Windsor, written by William Shakespeare in the year 1598.
Gentles and fair ladies, a poet's life is not always as agreeable as you may think. We poets are merely craftsmen, like this man who tailors clothes or that man who mixes ingeniously rare scents into perfumes. All must earn enough to buy the necessaries of life, and 'tis tragic that often we must bow to the stern commands of employers who understand little of our craft. My own case, for example. In the year 1597, I wrote two plays about our King Henry IV, and in both of them I portrayed a certain jolly debauched knight, Sir John Falstaff. Not only did these plays and Sir John find favor with my many-headed sovereign, the public, for whom a playwright must take pains to please, but they also found favor with our most gracious Queen Elizabeth. In time, the Queen summoned me unto her and made it known to me that she would be greatly pleased to see yet another play of Sir John Falstaff. "Master William," said she, "we would have you write us a play which shows that hearty knight in love. And, sir," she continued, "apply yourself instantly and diligently to the writing thereof, for we have a great festival at Windsor Palace a fortnight hence, and we would fain see your work acted before us at that time." So saying, our queen dismissed me courteously. Now, I would be the last to deny wit and perception to our great sovereign, but to demand a five-act play to be written in 14 days... indeed, that were thoughtless and ill-advised. And to show Sir John Falstaff in love, that villainous corrupter of youth, whom I had often shewn to be too cynical and worldly wise, and I too indolent to exert himself in amorous adventures. But what to do? Truth, I could not refuse my sovereign's orders. So I wrote that play in prose to get it done more speedily, and I showed Sir John Falstaff's love to be made of a metal appropriate to the coin of his personality. I called the work The Merry Wives of Windsor, and it has to do with Falstaff's younger days. But even then, of course, Sir John was old, fat, and villainous, as you may readily tell by listening to this speech he made to his servant Pistol as they sat one day in Sir John's lodgings at the Garter Inn in Windsor.
My honest lad, I will tell you what I am about.
2 yards and more.
No quips now, Pistol. Indeed, I am in the waist 2 yards about. But I am now about no waist. I am about thrift.
Oh?
Briefly, I do mean to make love to Master Ford's wife. I can construe the action of a familiar style and the hardest voice of her behavior to be English rightly is, I am Sir John Falstaff.
The anchor is deep. Will that humor pass?
Now, the report goes, she has all the rule of her husband's purse. He hath a mountain of coin, so I have writ me here a letter to her, and here another to her friend, Mistress Page, who even now also gave me good eyes.
Oh?
Mistress Page bears the purse, too. She is a region of Guiana, all gold and bounty. I will be cheater to them both, and they shall be exchequers to me. They shall be my East and West Indies, and I will trade to them both.
Oh.
Go, bear thou this letter to Mistress Page, and this to Mistress Ford. We will thrive, lad. We will thrive.
Shall I, Sir Pandrus of Troy, become... I will run no base humor. Here, take the humor letters. I will keep the havior of reputation.
If thou serve me not well, good Pistol, why should you grow fat on my bounty? I am too thrifty to retain servants who will not do my bidding. Mine host of the Garter.
What says me, Bully Rock? Speak scholarly and wisely.
Truly, mine host, I must turn away my follower, Pistol.
Discard Bully Hercules? Cashier? Oh, let him wag. Trot, trot.
Perhaps thou wouldst like the name in your employ.
Thou'rt an emperor. Caesar, Kaiser, Caesar. I will entertain Pistol. He shall draw. He shall tap. Said I well, Bully Hector?
Do so, good mine host.
I have spoke. Let him follow. Come, Pistol. Let me see thee froth and lime.
follow.
A good pistol, follow him.
Oh.
A tapster is a good trade. An old cloak makes a new jerkin. A withered serving man a fresh tapster. Go, adieu.
No, oh, let vultures gripe thy guts. You would turn me away and make a base chapter of me. I have operations in my head which be humors of revenge. I will discuss the humor of thy villainous loves to the husbands of those two dames thou wouldst betray. And my humor shall not cool. I will incense husbands Ford and Page to deal with poison. For I am now the mart of malcontents.
While Sir John's discharged servant Pistol vowed revenge on his master, Sir John hastened to find another messenger to carry his love letters to Mistress Page and Mistress Ford. These ladies, I should tell you now, were two saucy, merry hussars of Windsor. Merry and saucy, yet with all of the good, virtuous stock that makes our people what they are. To Mistress Page, for one, the receipt of Sir John's letter caused amazement and consternation.
What? Have I escaped love letters in the holiday time of my beauty, and am I now a subject for them? Let me see again how this letter reads. Ask me no reason why I love you, for though love use reason for his physician, he admits him not for his counselor. You are not young, no more am I. Go to, then, there's sympathy. You are merry, so am I. You love sack, and so do I. Let it suffice thee, Mistress Page, at the least. If the love of soldier can suffice, that I love thee. I will not say pity me, it's not a soldier-like phrase, but I say love me. By me, thine own true knight, by day or night, or any kind of light, with all his might for thee to fight, John Falstaff. Oh, wicked, wicked world! One that is well-nigh worn to pieces with age to show himself a young gallant, that he dares in this manner assay me. Why, he hath not been thrice in my company. How shall I be revenged on him? For revenged I will be, as sure as his guts are made of puddings.
Mistress Page, trust me. I was going to your house.
Oh, Mistress Ford, and trust me, I was coming to you. You look very ill.
Oh, Mistress Page, give me some counsel.
Oh, why, what's the matter, woman?
If I would but go to hell for an eternal moment or so, I could be knighted.
What? Thou liest. Sir Alice Ford.
Here, read. Read. Perceive how I might be knighted. I shall think the worse of fat men as long as I have an eye to make a difference of men's liking. What tempest threw this whale with so many tons of oil in his belly ashore at Windsor? How shall I be revenged on him? I think the best way were to entertain him with hope till the wicked fire of lust have melted him in his own grief. Did you ever hear the like?
Letter for letter, but that the name of Page and Ford differs. To thy great comfort in this mystery of ill opinions, here's the twin brother of thy letter.
Oh,
I warrant he hath a thousand of these letters, writ with blank space for different names.
I warrant.
Well, I will find you 20 lascivious turtles, ere one chaste man.
Why, this is the very same, the very hand, the very words. Ah, what does he think of it?
Nay, I know not. It makes me almost ready to wrangle with mine own honesty. Let's be revenged on him.
Mm-hmm.
Mistress Ford?
What, Mrs. Page?
Let's appoint him a meeting, give him a show of comfort in his suit, and lead him on with a fine baited delay, till he hath pawned his horses to mine host of the garter.
Nay, I will consent to act any villainy against him, as it may not sully the cherryness of our honesty. Oh, that my husband saw this letter. It would give eternal food to his jealousy.
Look, look where he comes, and my good man, too. He's as far from jealousy as I am from giving him cause, and that, I hope, is an unmeasurable distance.
You are the happier woman.
Let's consult together against this greasy knight. Come hither.
Even as Mistress Ford and Mistress Page withdrew, storming with indignation at Sir John's insult to their honor, and vowing vengeance against him for it, the discharged servant Pistol was informing their husbands of Falstaff's villainous plans. Husband Page refused to believe. Husband Ford did not want to.
Well, I hope it be not so.
Oh, hope is a curtle dog in some affairs, Master Ford. Sir John affects thy wife.
Why, sir, my wife is not young.
Oh, he woos both high and low, both rich and poor, both young and old, one with another, Ford.
Love my wife.
With liver burning hot. Take heed, Have open eye, for thieves do foot by night. Take heed, ere summer comes, or cuckoo birds do sing.
I'll be patient. I'll find out this.
And this is true. He loves your wife, too, Master Page.
Eh?
That's the short and the long. My name is Pistol. I speak, and I avouch, 'tis true. My name is Pistol, and Falstaff loves your wife. Adieu.
I will seek out Falstaff.
Never heard such a drawling, affecting rogue as that Pistol.
If I do find it, well...
I will not believe such a Catayan, though the priest of the town commended him for a true man.
But, Master Page, you heard what the knave told us, did you not?
Hang him, slave. I think he lies. He's with one of Falstaff's discarded men, a very rogue. Now he be out of service.
I like his information, never the better for that. Does Falstaff lie at the garter?
I marry, does he? If he should intend this voyage towards my wife, I would turn her loose to him. But he gets more of her than sharp words, that it lie on my head.
I do not misdoubt my wife, but I would be loath to turn them together. I cannot be thus satisfied.
Look where my ranting host of the garter inn comes now. There's either liquor in his pate or money in his purse. He looks so merrily. I'll leave you with him, Master Ford.
How now, mine host?
How now, Bully Rock? Thou'rt a gentleman.
Good, mine host of the garter. A word with you.
What seest thou me, Bully Rock?
Then it was, Mary, that Master Ford fell in league with his suspicions against his wife and hatched a plan. To carry out this plan, he must needs make the acquaintance of Sir John himself and be doubly sure that Sir John did not know that he was the husband of Mistress Ford. So he begged the jolly host of the Garter Inn, where Sir John kept his lodgings, to give him access to the knight, at the same time keeping his true identity a secret.
And hast thou no suit against my knight, my guest cavalier?
None, I protest. But I'll give you a bottle of burnt sack to give me recourse to him and tell him my name is Brooke, only for a jest.
Mehand, bully! Thou shalt have egress and regress, said I well, and thy name shall be Brooke. And now, fare thee well till thou comest.
Oh, Page, be a secure fool, and stand so firmly on his wife's frailty. Yet I cannot put off my opinion so easily. She was in his company at Page's house, and what they made there I know not. Well, I look further into it. And I have a disguise to sound Falstaff. If I find her honest, I lose not my labor. If she be otherwise, 'tis labor well bestowed.
Meanwhile, the two merry wives had discussed further their letters from Falstaff and had agreed to accept, seemingly, his offers of love. By this ruse, they hoped to lead him on till he was hopelessly compromised and publicly revealed as a villain and a fool. They made careful plans to this end, and then, without further ado, sent a messenger to Falstaff with news that would delight him. This messenger of theirs was a certain garrulous woman known as Mistress Quickly. If you have ever seen my plays of Henry Fourth, you'll recognize her. And Mistress Quickly was only too delighted to lend her aid to any plan of trickery. She hurried to see Falstaff at his lodgings.
Sir John, here's a woman would speak with you.
Let her approach.
Give your worship good morrow.
Good morrow, good wife. What with me?
Shall I vouchsafe your worship a word or two?
2,000, fair woman, and I'll vouchsafe thee the hearing.
There is one Mistress Ford, sir. I pray come a little nearer this way.
Well, one Mistress Ford, you say?
Your worship says very true. I pray your worship come a little nearer this way.
Oh, I warrant thee nobody hears. Well, Mistress Ford, what of her?
Why, sir, she's a good creature. Oh, Lord, Lord, your worship's a wanton. Well, heaven forgive you and all of us, I pray.
Mistress Ford, come, come. Mistress Ford.
Mary, this is the short and the long of it. You have brought her into such a canary, this is wonderful. The best courtier of them all when the court lay at Windsor could never have brought her to such a canary.
But what says she to me? Be brief, my good she Mercury.
Mary, she hath received your letter, for the which she thanks you 1,000 times, and she gives you notified that her husband will be absent from his house between 10 and 11.
10 and 11?
Aye, forsooth. And then you may come and see the picture she says that you want of. Master Ford, her husband, will be from home.
Yes.
Alas, the sweet woman leads an ill life with him. He's a very jealous man.
10 and 11. Woman, commend me to her. I will not fail.
Why, you say well. But I have another messenger to your worship.
So?
Mistress Page hath her hearty commendations to you, too. And she bade me tell your worship that her husband is seldom from home, but she hopes there will come a time.
No.
I never knew a woman to dote upon a man. Surely I think you have charms. Oh, yes, in truth.
Not I assure thee. Setting the attraction of my good parts aside, I have no other charms.
Blessing on your heart for a charm.
But I pray thee, tell me this. Has Ford's wife and Page's wife acquainted each other how they love me?
Oh, that were a jest indeed. They have not so little grace, I hope. That were a trick indeed.
Well, fare thee well. Commend me to them both. There's my purse. I am yet thy debtor.
Sir John had scant time to dress his bulk in elegance and perfume his beard in anticipation of his forthcoming rendezvous. For hardly had Mistress Quickly departed than another visitor to Sir John arrived at the Garter. It was none other than Mistress Ford's suspicious husband, disguised to a T and announcing himself as Master Brooke.
Sir John, there's one Master Brooke would fain speak with you and be acquainted with you, and hath sent your worship a morning's draft of sack.
Brooke is the name?
Aye, sir.
Call him in. Such Brooks are welcome to me that o'erflow such liquor.
Bless you, Sir John.
And you, sir. Would you speak with me?
I make bold to press with so little preparation upon you.
You're welcome. What's your will?
Sir, I am a gentleman that hath spent much. My name is Brooke.
Good Master Brooke, I desire more acquaintance.
Good Sir John, I sue for yours. And not to charge you, but I must let you understand I think myself in better plight for a lender than you are. The which hath something emboldened me to this unseasoned intrusion. For they say, if money go before, always do lie open.
Money is a good soldier, sir, and will on.
I have a bag of money here troubles me. If you will help to bear it, Sir John, take all or half for the easing me of the carriage.
Sir, I know not how I may deserve to be your porter.
I'll tell you, sir. I hear you're a scholar. I'll be brief with you.
Very well. Proceed.
There's a gentlewoman in this town. Her husband's name is Ford.
Well, sir,
I've long loved her, and I protest to you, bestowed much on her.
So?
Briefly, I have pursued her as love hath pursued me, which hath been on the wing of all occasions. For whatsoever I have merited, either in my mind or in my means, reward I am sure I have received none, unless experience be a jewel that I have purchased at infinite rate.
Have you received no promise of satisfaction at her hands?
Never.
To what purpose have you unfolded this to me?
When I have told you that, I have told you all. And now, Sir John, here is the heart of my purpose. You are a gentleman of excellent breeding, admirable discourse, of a great admittance, authentic in your place and person, generally allowed for your many warlike, court-like, and learned preparations.
Oh, sir.
Oh, believe it, for you know it.
Well, I...
Now, there is money. Spend it, spend it, spend more. Spend all I have. Only give me so much of your time in exchange of it as to lay an amiable siege to the honesty of this Ford's wife. Use your art of wooing. Win her to consent to you. If any man may, you may as soon as any.
Would it apply well to the vehemency of your affection that I should win what you would enjoy? Methinks you prescribe to yourself very preposterously.
Oh, understand my drift. She dwells so securely on the excellency of her honor that the folly of my soul dares not present itself. Now, could I come to her with any detection in my hand, I could drive her then from the ward of her purity, her reputation, her marriage vow, and a thousand other... her defenses, which now are too strongly embattled against me. What say you to it, Sir John?
Master Brooke, I will first make bold with your money. Next, give me your hand. And last, as I am a gentleman, you shall, if you will, enjoy Ford's wife.
Oh, good sir.
I say you shall.
Want no money, Sir John? You shall want none.
Want no Mistress Ford, Master Brooke? You shall want none. I shall be with her, I may tell you, by her own appointment. Even as you came into me, her assistant or go-between parted from me.
What?
I say I shall be with her between 10 and 11.
What?
For at that time the jealous rascally knave her husband will be forth. Come you to me at night, you shall know how I speak.
I am blessed in your acquaintance.
Do you know Ford, sir?
Hang him, poor cuckoldly knave. I know him not.
No, I wish you knew Ford, sir. Then you might avoid him if you saw him.
Hang him, mechanical salt-butter robe. I will stare him out of his wits. I will awe him with my cudgel. It shall hang like a meteor or the cuckold's horns. Come to me soon at night, thou Master Brook.
What a damned Epicurean rascal is this? Who says this is improvident jealousy? My wife hath sent to him. The hour is fixed, the match is made. Would any man have thought this? My bed shall be abused. My coffers ransacked. My reputation gnawn at. Oh, Page is an ass. A secure ass. He will trust his wife. He will not be jealous. I'll rather trust a Fleming with my butter. Parson Hugh the Welshman with my cheese. An Irishman with my aqua vitae bottle. Than my wife with herself. 11 o'clock is the hour. I will prevent this. Detect my wife. Be revenged on Falstaff and laugh at Page. I will about it. Better 3 hours too soon than a minute too late.
Then indeed began a series of busy actions by all of our characters. Master Ford set out to find his friend Page and a mutual friend of theirs, a certain Welsh parson named Sir Hugh Evans. He would ask these two men to sup with him, that he might bring them home with him at the very hour that he could be sure of finding his wife there, together with Sir John Falstaff. Sir John, unaware that his plot had been discovered, preened himself gleefully for his meeting with Ford's wife. As for Mistress Ford, that virtuous and jolly lady, together with her friend Mistress Page, put the finishing touches on a plot that would make Falstaff rue the day he ever wooed her.
John! Robert!
Quickly, quickly, is the wash basket ready?
I warrant. What, Robin, I say.
Come.
Here, set the basket down.
Give your men their instructions. We must be brief.
Mary, as I told you before, John and Robert, be ready here by the brew house. And when I suddenly call you, come forth. And without any pause or staggering. Take this wash basket on your shoulder. That done, trudge with it in all haste and carry it to Datchet Mead, and there empty it in a muddy ditch close by the Thames side.
You will do it, huh?
I have told them over and over. They lack no direction. Now be gone, John and Robert, and come when you are called.
Damn,
go to, then. Oh, we'll use this unwholesome humidity, this gross watery pumpkin. We'll teach him to know turtles from jays. Quick, Mr. Page. Be gone by the front door. Our knight approaches by the back one.
Oh, have I caught thee, my heavenly jewel? Why, now let me die, for I've lived long enough. This is the period of my ambition. Oh, this blessed hour.
Oh, sweet. Sir John.
Mistress Ford, I cannot cog, I cannot prate, Mistress Ford. Now shall I sin in my wish. I would make thee my lady.
Aye, your lady, Sir John? Alas, I should be a pitiful lady.
Let the court of France show me such another. What made me love thee? Let that persuade thee there's something extraordinary in thee. Come, I cannot cog and say thou art this and that, like many of these lisping hawthorn buds that come like women in men's apparel. I cannot. But I love thee. None but thee. And thou deservest it.
Do not betray me, sir. I fear you love Mistress Page.
Thou mightst as well say I love to walk by the prison gate.
Well, heaven knows how I love you. And you shall one day find it.
Keep in that mind, I'll deserve it.
Nay, I must tell you, so you do. Or else I could not be in that mind. Why, there comes Mistress Page to my door, sweating and blowing and looking wildly. What can it be she wants?
Oh, she shall not see me here. I will hide behind the arras.
Pray you, do so. She's a very tattling woman.
Mistress Ford!
What's the matter? How now?
Oh, Mistress Ford, what have you done? You're shamed. You're overthrown. You're undone forever.
What's the matter, good Mistress Page? Why, alas, what's the matter?
Your husband's coming hither, woman, together with my own husband and the Welsh parson, Sir Hugh, to search for a gentleman that he says is here, now, in the house, by your consent, to take an ill advantage of his absence. You are undone.
Speak louder.
You are undone.
Tis not so.
I hope. Oh, pray heaven it be not so, that you have such a man here. But 'tis most certain your husband is coming and his friends with him to search for such a one. Oh. If you know yourself clear, why, I am glad of it. But if you have a friend here, convey him out.
What shall I do? There is a gentleman, my dear friend.
Oh.
And I fear not mine own shame so much as his peril.
For shame. Your husband's here at hand. Bethink you of some conveyance.
Oh.
In the house you cannot hide him. Oh, how have you deceived me. Mm. Look, here is a wash basket. If he be of any reasonable stature, he may creep in here and throw foul linen upon him as if it were going to the wash, and then send him by your two men to Datchet Mead.
He's too big to go in there. Oh, what shall I do?
Let me see it. I'll in. Follow your friend's counsel. I'll in.
What, Sir John Falstaff? Are these your letters?
I love thee, too. Help me away. Let me creep in here.
There, cover him up. Call your men, Mrs. Ford. Oh, you dissembling night, you.
What? John! Robert! John! Go, take up these clothes here quickly. Now carry them to the laundress and dash it me. Now quickly, come!
Come here. Now pause while the maids swallow me, and then let me be your jest I deserve it. Oh, now, here. Will I bear you this basket?
To the laundress for soup.
Well, what have you to do whether they bear it? You were best meddle with washing. Now go, Robert and John. Now take your basket and go.
We go, Mr. Corbin.
Gentlemen, I have dreamed tonight there was a man here. Oh, here. Here'll be my keys. Ascend my chamber. Search, seek, find out. I'll warrant we'll unkennel the fox. Let me stop this way first by locking the door. So, now on cape.
Good Master Ford, be contented. You wrong yourself too much.
True, Master Page. Up, gentlemen. You shall see sport anon. Follow me, gentlemen.
This is very fantastical humor, Sir Chalices.
Nay, follow him, Sir Hugh. Let's see the issue of it.
Oh, is there not a double excellency in this? We had planned everything in but your husband's actual appearance.
And I know not which pleases me better, that my husband is deceived or Sir John.
Oh, what a taking that rascal knight must have been in when your husband asked what was in the basket.
I am half afraid he will have need of washing, so throwing him into the water will do him a benefit.
Oh, hang him, dishonest rascal. I would that all of the same strain were in the same distress.
I think my husband has some special suspicion of Falstaff's being here, for I never saw him so gross in his jealousy till now.
I will lay a plot to try that, and we will yet have more tricks with Falstaff.
Shall we send that foolish carrion mistress quickly to him and excuse his throwing into the water and give him another hope to betray him to another punishment?
We will do it. Let him be sent for tomorrow, 8 o'clock to the Amen.
Oh, I cannot find him. Maybe the knave bragged that he could accomplish.
Heard you that.
You use me well, Master Ford.
I do so.
Will heaven make you better than your thoughts.
Amen.
Oh, you do yourself mighty wrong, Master Ford.
I must spare it.
If there be anybody in the house and in the chambers and in the coffers and in the presses, heaven forgive my sins at the day of judgment.
Fie, Master Ford, are you not ashamed? What spirit, what devil suggests this imagination? I will not have your jealousy for all the wealth of Windsor Castle.
Oh, it is my fault, Master Page. I suffer for it.
You suffer for a bad conscience? Your wife is as honest a woman as I will desire among 5,000 and 502.
Well, I promised you a dinner. Come walk in the park. Oh, I pray you pardon me. I will hereafter make known to you why I have done this. Come, wife.
Sir?
Come, Mr. Page. Oh, I pray you pardon me. Very heartily pardon me.
Let's go, gentlemen. And I do invite you tomorrow morning to my house to breakfast. After we'll a birding together. I have a fine hawk for the bush. Shall it be so?
Anything. Go fetch me a quart of sack and put a post in it.
Aye, sir.
Oh, have I lived to be carried in a basket like a barrow of butcher's offal, to be thrown into the Thames? The rogues slighted me into the river with as little remorse as they would have drowned a blind bitch's puppies. 15 in the litter. And you may know by my size that I have a kind of alacrity in sinking. I had been drowned, but that the shore was shelvy and shallow, a death that I abhor. For the water swells a man, and what a thing should I have been when I had been swelled.
Yes,
your sack, Sir John.
Come, let me pour in some sack to the Thames water, for my belly's as cold as if I'd swallowed snowballs.
Oh, there's Mistress. Mistress Quickly here to see you.
Come in, woman.
By your leave, I cry your mercy. Give your worship good morrow.
How now?
Marry, sir, I come to your worship from Mistress Ford.
Mistress Ford? I have had Ford enough. I was thrown into the ford. I have my belly full of ford.
Oh, last the day, good heart, that was not her fault. She laments so for it that it would yearn your heart to see it. Her husband goes this morning a-birding.
Well...
She desires you once more to come to her between 8 and 9. I must carry her word quickly. She'll make you amends, I warrant you.
Well, I will visit her, tell her so.
I will tell her.
Do so between 9 and 10, sayest thou?
8 and 9, sir.
Well, be gone. I will not miss her.
Peace be with you, sir.
Sir John Falstaff prepared to visit Mistress Ford once again. But in the midst of his hurried preparations, her husband Ford, still disguised as Master Brooke, came a-knocking at his door. This time, Ford came with a light heart, half assured that Falstaff had merely bragged falsely when he had claimed yesterday that he would enjoy the favors of Mistress Ford.
Bless you, Sir John.
Now, Master Brooke, you come to know what hath passed between me and Ford's wife?
That indeed, Sir John, is my business.
Master Brooke, I will not lie to you. I was at her house at the hour appointed me.
And sped you, sir?
Very ill-favoredly, Master Brooke.
Well, how so, sir? Did she change her determination?
No, Master Brooke, but her husband, Master Brooke, comes me in the instant of our encounter, and at his heels a rabble of his companions, thither provoked and instigated by his distemper, and forsooth to search his house for his wife's love.
What? Why, you were there?
Well, I was there.
And did he search for you and could not find you?
You shall hear. As good luck would have it, comes in one Mistress Page, gives intelligence of Ford's approach, and in her invention and Ford's wife's distraction, they conveyed me into a wash basket.
A wash basket?
By the Lord, a wash basket. Ram me in with foul shirts and smocks, socks, foul stockings, greasy napkins. And that, Master Brooke, there was the rankest compound of villainous smell that ever offended nostril.
And how long lay you there?
Nay, you shall hear, Master Brooke. Being thus crammed in the basket, a couple of Ford's knaves, his servants, were called forth by the mistress to carry me in the name of foul clothes to Datchet Lane.
Oh.
They took me on their shoulders, met the jealous knave, their master, in the door, who asked them once or twice what they had in their basket.
Well?
I quake with fear lest the lunatic knave will have it searched. But fate, ordaining that he should be cuckolded, held his hand.
Oh.
Well, on went he for a search, and away went I for foul clothes. But mark the sequel, Master Brooke.
Yes?
When I was more than half stewed in grease, like a Dutch dish, I was thrown into the Thames and cooled, glowing hot, in that surge, like a horseshoe. Think of that, hissing hot. Think of that, Master Brooke.
Oh, in good sadness, sir. I'm sorry that for my sake you have suffered all this. My suit, then, is desperate. You will undertake her no more?
Master Brooke, I will be thrown into Etna, as I have been into the Thames, ere I will leave her thus.
Oh.
Her husband is this morning gone a-birding.
What?
I have received from her another embassy of meeting. Twixt 8 and 9 is the hour, Master Brooke.
Why, it is past 8 already, sir.
Is it? I will then address me to my appointment. Come to me at your convenient leisure, and you shall know how I speed. Adieu. You shall have her yet, Master Brooke.
Oh,
adieu.
Is this a vision? Is this a dream? Do I sleep? Master Ford, awake. Awake, Master Ford. This 'tis to be married. This 'tis to have linen and wash baskets. Well, I will now take the lecture. He is at my house. He cannot escape me. It is impossible he should. He cannot creep into a halfpenny purse, nor into a pepper box. But lest the devil that guides him should aid him, I will search impossible places.
Mistress Ford, your sorrow hath eaten up my sufferance.
Oh.
I see you are sorrowful of my treatments, and I profess requital to a hair's breadth.
Oh.
Not only, Mistress Ford, in the simple office of love, but in all the accoutrement, compliment, ceremony of it. But are you sure of your husband now?
Uh-huh. He's a birding, sweet Sir John.
What ho, Gossip Ford? What ho?
Mistress Page again. Mm. Oh, step into the chamber, Sir John. You must not be seen here by her again.
No, sweetheart. Who's at home besides yourself?
Why, none but mine own people.
Indeed.
No, certainly. Speak louder.
Truly. I am so glad you have nobody here.
Why?
Why, woman, your husband is in his old looms again. I am glad the fat knight is not here.
Why? Does he talk of him?
Oh, of none but him, and swears he was carried out the last time he searched for him in a washbasket. Protests to my husband that he is now here, and that he hath drawn Sir Hugh from their sport to make another experiment of his suspicion.
Oh.
But I am glad the knight is not here. Now he shall see his own foolery.
How near is my husband, Mistress Page?
Hard by, at street end. He will be here anon.
I am undone. The knight is here.
Oh, then why? You're utterly shamed, and he is but a dead man. What a woman you are. Away with him, away with him. Better shame than murder.
Which way should he go? How should I bestow him? Shall I put him into the wash basket again?
No, I'll come no more in the basket. May I not go out ere he comes?
Alas, three of Master Ford's brothers watch the door with pistols.
Oh, what shall I do? What shall I creep up into the chimney.
Oh, there, they always discharge their birds. Pieces. No. I'll creep into the kiln.
Oh, where is it?
Oh, you'll see it there, on my word. Oh, there's no hiding you in the house.
I'll go out then.
Oh, if you go out in your own semblance, you die, Sir John, unless you go out disguised.
How might we disguise?
Alas, the day I know not. There is no woman's gown big enough for him.
Good hearts devise something. Any extremity rather than a murder?
My maid's aunt, the fat woman of Bedford, has a gown above.
On my word, it'll serve him. She's as big as he is. And there's her hat and muffler, too. Run up, Sir John, run.
Go, go, sweet Sir John. Mistress Page and I will look for some linen to veil your head.
Quickly, we come dress you straight. Put on the gown a while.
Oh, must I indulge things?
Oh. I would my husband would meet him in that shape. He cannot abide the old woman of Brentford. He swears she's a witch, forbade her my house, and hath threatened to beat her.
Heaven guide him to thy husband's cudgel, then, and the devil guide his cudgel afterwards.
But is my husband coming?
Eh, in good sadness is he, and talks of the washbasket, too. Howsoever he hath had intelligence.
We'll try that, for I'll appoint my men to carry the basket again, to meet him at the door with it, as they did last time.
Nay, but he'll be here presently. Let's go dress Sir John like the Witch of Brentford.
I'll first direct my men what they shall do with the basket. Go up, I'll bring linen for him straight.
Ah, hang him, dishonest varlet. We cannot misuse him enough. We'll leave a proof by that which we will do. Wives may be merry, and yet honest, too.
Robert and John! Go, take the wash basket again on your shoulders. Your master's hard at the door. If he bid you set it down, obey him. Now quickly, dispatch!
All right.
Aye, but if it prove true, Master Page, have you then any way to unfool me again?
Oh, Master
Ford. Set down that wash basket, villains. Somebody call my wife. You send the basket. Oh, you pantaly rascals. Now shall the devil be shamed. What, wife, I say? Come forth, come forth. Behold what honest clothes you send forth to bleaching.
This passes. Master Ford, you are not to go loose any longer. You must be pinioned.
Why, this is lunatics. This is mad as a mad dog.
Indeed, Master Ford, this is not well. Indeed.
So say I too, sir. Come hither, Mistress Ford.
Yes?
Oh, Mistress Ford, the honest woman, the modest wife, a virtuous creature that hath the jealous fool to her husband. I suspect without cause, mistress, do I?
Heaven be my witness, you do, if you suspect me in any dishonesty.
Well, said brazen face. Hold forth the basket. Come on, step off, sirrah.
This person.
Are you not ashamed? Now let the clothes alone.
I shall find you anon.
It is unreasonable. Will you take up your wife's clothes? Come away.
Empty the basket, I say.
Why, man, why?
Master Page, as I am a man, there was one conveyed out of my house yesterday in this basket. Why may not he be there again? Pluck me out all the linen.
If you find a man there, you shall die a flea's death.
By my fidelity, this is not well, Master Ford. This wrongs you.
Master Ford, you must pray and not follow the imaginations of your own heart. This is jealousy.
Child! He's not there I seek for.
No, nowhere else but in your brain.
Oh, help to search my house this one time. Satisfy me once more. Once more search with me.
What ho, Mistress Page? Yeah. Come you and the old woman down. Huh? My husband will come up into the chamber.
Old woman? What old woman is that?
Why, it is my maid's aunt of Brentford.
Why, a witch! A hag, an old cozening hag. Have enough of it in my house? She comes of errands, does she? Come down, you witch! You hag, you! Come down, I say!
Nay, good sweet husband, oh, good gentleman, let him not strike the old woman.
Oh, Mother Pratt, come, give me your hand.
I'll prat her!
No.
Get out of my house! You witch! You hag! Oh, you little rascal, I'll see you there! Take that and that and that! Fortune,
are you not ashamed? I think you've killed the poor woman.
Nay, he'll do his oath as a goodly credit for you.
Hang her, witch.
I can't. No, I think the woman is a witch indeed. I like not when a woman has a great beard. I spy a great beard under her muffler.
Oh, will you follow, gentlemen? I beseech you follow. See but the issue of my jealousy.
Let's obey his humor a little further. Come, gentlemen.
Trust me, he beat him most pitifully.
By the mass, that he did not. He beat him most unpitifully, Miss Porter.
I'll have the cudgeled hallowed and hung o'er the altar. It hath done meritorious service.
What think you? May we, with the warrant of womanhood and the witness of a good conscience, pursue Falstaff with any further revenge? Or shall we tell our husbands how we have served him?
Yes, by all means. If it be but to scrape the jealousy out of your husband's brains. If they can find in their hearts the poor, unvirtuous, fat knight shall be any further afflicted, we too will still be the ministers.
I'll warrant they'll have him publicly shamed. And I think there should be no period to the jest should he not be publicly shamed.
Come to the forge with it, then. Shape it. I would not have things cool.
Nay.
At length, after Master Ford and his companions had searched the house from top to bottom and found nothing whatsoever, they returned to the Merry Wives. Ford was dismayed and bewildered, not knowing what to think. Master Page and the Welsh parson, Sir Hugh, berated him soundly for his violent jealousy. It was then that the two Merry Wives took mercy on him and made a clean breast of the whole story. As they told of the indignities they had made Sir John to suffer, much laughter went around, and it was shared in, sheepishly, by Master Ford as well as his friends.
One of the best distresses of a woman as ever I did look upon.
And did he send you both these letters at an instant?
Within a quarter of an hour.
Pardon me, wife. Henceforth, do what thou wilt. I rather will suspect the sun with cold than thee with wantonness.
Tis well.
But let our plot go forward. Let our wives yet once again, to make us public sport, appoint a meeting with this old fat fellow, where we may take him and disgrace him for it.
There is no better way than that they spoke of.
How? To send him word they'll meet him in the park at midnight? Fie, he'll never come.
You say he has been thrown in the riffus and has been grievously beaten as an old woman. Methinks his flesh is punished. He shall have no desire.
So think I too.
Devise but how you'll use him when he comes, and let us too devise to bring him thither.
There is an old tale goes that Herne the hunter, sometimes the keeper here in Windsor Forest, doth all the winter time at still midnight walk round about an oak with great ragged horns. You have heard of such a spirit?
Well, yet there are many that do fear in deep of night to walk by this Herne's oak. But what of this?
Well, Mary, this is our device, that Falstaff at that oak shall meet with us disguised like Herne with huge horns on his head.
Oh, and then what shall be done with him? What is your plot?
That likewise have we thought upon, and thus Nan Page, my daughter, and my little son, and three or four more of their growth, will dress like urchins, oafs, and fairies, green and white. Upon a sudden, as Falstaff, she and I are newly met, let them from forth a saw pit rush at once with some diffused song. Upon their sight, we too in great amazedness will fly, and then let them all encircle him about
until he tell the truth. Let the supposed fairies pinch him down and burn him with their tapers.
And the truth being known, we'll all present ourselves and mock him home to Windsor.
The children must be practiced well to this, or they'll ne'er do it.
I will teach the children their behavior.
That will be excellent. I'll go and buy them masks.
Then go, Mistress Ford, and send quickly to Sir John to find if he will meet us over again.
All the world might be cousin, for I have been cousin and beaten too. If it should come to the ear of the court, they would melt me out of my fat drop by drop and liquor fishermen's boots with me. I warrant they would whip me with their fine wits until I were as crestfallen as a dried pear. Well, if my wind were but long enough to say my prayers, I would repent.
Good day, Sir John.
Now, whence come you, Mistress Quickly?
From the two parties, forsooth.
The devil take one party in his name the other. I have suffered more for their sakes, more than the villainous inconstancy of man's disposition is able to bear.
And have not they suffered? Yes, I warrant, speciously one of them. Mistress Ford, good heart, is beaten black and blue that you cannot see a white spot about her.
What tellest thou me of black and blue? I was beaten myself into all the colors of the rainbow. And I was like to be apprehended for the Witch of Brentford.
Sir, let me speak with you in your chamber. You shall hear how things go, and I warrant to your content. Here is a letter will say somewhat. Good hearts, what a do here is to bring you together. Sure, one of you does not serve heaven well that you are so cross.
Come up into my chamber. Rattling. Go, I'll hold with them. This is the third time. I hope good luck lies in odd numbers. Mm. Away. Go, Mistress Quickly. They say there is divinity in odd numbers, either in the nativity, chance, or death. Away.
I'll provide you a chain for your disguise as Herne, and I'll do what I can to get you a pair of horns.
Away, I say, time wears. Hold up your head and mince.
Now, at this point in the story, gentles and fair ladies, I digress for a moment. Since I was writing The Merry Wives of Windsor at the express command of Her Gracious Majesty Queen Elizabeth, and since the comedy would receive its opening performance before the court, I decided to work out the last act of poor Falstaff's adventures in the form of a mask. A mask, as you know, if you have ever been to our court, is a fantastical pageant, a little play of itself indeed, but one in which the actors dance and sing and speak with great elegance. The idea of the mask was imported some years ago from foreign courts, but it has since achieved great popularity at our own court in England. My friend Ben Johnson, as a matter of fact, has been doing very well lately with the masks that he's written. Be that as it may, I interpose this information as an apology in a way for the fantastic scene which follows. Suffice it to say that I warped my plot so in order to please Her Majesty with a mask in this play. I pray you enjoy it for its music and its songs, and be not disturbed at our sudden departure from the realistic way in which we have conducted this comedy up till now. In the dark and frightful hour before midnight, in the midst of Windsor Forest, Sir Hugh Evans, the Welsh parson, was giving last-minute instructions to the troop of little children that he had trained to act this night as fairies.
You trip, fairies, trip. Come and remember your parts. Be bold, I pray you. Now, follow me into this pit and hide yourselves well. But when I give the watchwords, do as I bid you. Come, come, trip, trip, trip.
Sir Hugh and his troop of fairies vanished into darkness as Sir John Falstaff approached stealthily through the wood towards Herne's oak. The absurdity of his disguise as the ghost of Herne the Hunter would have set a malcontent to fits of laughter. His clothes were fantastic, and as a mask for his face, Sir John wore the head of a buck with two great antlers spreading above it. He reached the oak in breathless silence, and there he waited, a little frightened by his dark surroundings, for Mistress Ford.
The Windsor bell hath struck. The minute draws on. Now the hot-blooded gods assist me. Remember, Jove, thou wast a bull for thy Europa. Love set on thy horns. When gods have hot backs, what shall poor men do? For me, I am here a Windsor stag, and the fattest, I think, of the forest. Who comes here? My doe?
The John! Art thou here, my dear? My male dear.
Oh, my doe with a black scut. Let the sky rain potatoes. Let it thunder to the tune of green sleeves.
Mistress Page has come with me, sweetheart.
Divide me like a bribe buck. Each a hawk. Am I a woodman? Speak I like Herne the Hunter? Mm-hmm. As I am a true spirit. Welcome.
What noise?
Heaven forgive our sins.
Why, what should this be?
Oh, away, Mrs. Page, away!
Oh, I think the devil will not have me damned, lest the oil that's in me should set hell on fire. He would never else cross me thus. Oh, what, again? He's coming closer.
And then there began to appear out of the black night a troop of little figures dressed in many colored garments, carrying small tapers. They danced fantastically as in a great circle from every side they slowly approached the terrified Sir John.
Berries, black, red, green, and white, you moonshine revelers and shades of night, you orphan heirs of mixed destiny, attend your office and your quality, Crier Hobgoblin!
I speak! Silence, elves, you airy toys! Cricket! To winds of chimneys shalt thou leap, where fires thou find'st unraked and hearts unswept, there pinch the maids as blue as bilberries. Our radiant queen hates sluts and slutteries.
They're fairies. People say that he who speaks to such shall die. I'll lie me down on the ground here and keep my eyes closed. No man their works must I.
Where she eats?
Here I am.
Go you, and where you find a maid that ere she sleep has thrice her prayers said, raise up the organs of her fantasy. Sleep she as sound as careless infancy. But those that sleep and think not on their sins, pinch them, arms, legs, back, shoulders, sides, and shins. But stay, I smell a man of Middle Earth.
Heaven defend me from that fairy that speaks like a Welshman, lest he transform me to a piece of cheese.
With trial fire, touch me his finger end. If he be chaste, the flame will back descend and turn him to no pain. No, but if he start, it is the flesh of a corrupted heart.
A trial, come.
Yes, a trial.
Will this finger take fire?
No! Oh.
Corrupt and tainted in desire. About him, fairy, sing a scornful rhyme. And as you trip, they'll pinch him to your thigh.
Sir Hugh Evans, the Welshman, and his troop of little children began to dance around the prostrate Falstaff and to pinch him and to singe him with their candles as they danced. Poor Falstaff, unfortunate man, fearing to flee or even open his eyes in the belief that these were fairies and any man who looked upon such must die. He, the fat, rascally knight, simply lay rolling upon the ground, his eyes tight shut, roaring with terror.
Sinful fantasy,
by your lust and luxury,
lust is but a bloody fire, kindled with unchaste desire, dead and hard with flames of fire, and thought to go them higher and higher. Kiss him, very futurely, kiss him for his villainy, kiss him and burn him and burn him above.
Thus they plagued Falstaff even to distraction, till suddenly, on a signal, the fairies vanished again into the night. Only Sir Hugh Evans remained, and in a moment a group of men and women joined him. They were the two merry wives, Ford and Page, and their husbands. These four had witnessed the whole of Falstaff's encounter with the fairies, and when those fairies finally disappeared, they could restrain themselves no longer. They burst into such a laughing as had never been heard within 100 leagues of here, and as the tears of mirth rolled down their cheeks, so did such jolly tears wash away much of their hatred against Sir John.
They do not fly. I think we have watched you now. Will none but Herne the Hunter serve your turn?
I pray you, come, hold up the jest no higher. Now, good Sir John, how like you wind the wine?
Sir John, we have had ill luck. We could never meet. I will never take you for my love again. But I will always count you my dear.
I do begin to perceive that I am made an ass.
Aye, and an ox, too. Both the proofs are extant.
And those were not fair?
Sir John Falstaff, serve God and leave your desires. and fairies will not pinch you.
Well said, Fairy Hugh.
And leave your jealousies too, I pray you.
I will never mistrust my wife again, till thou art able to woo her in good English.
Have I laid my brain in the sun and dried it? That I am ridden with a Welsh goat, too. It is time that I were choked with a piece of toasted cheese.
Cheese is not good to give putter. Your pelly is all putter.
Cheese and putter. Have I lived to stand at the thought of one that makes fritters of English? This is enough to be the decay of lust and late walking through the realm. Well, I am your theme, and you have the start of me. I am dejected.
Aww.
I am not even able to answer the Welsh flannel. Ignorance itself is a plummet o'er me. Use me as you will.
Oh, good husband, let us everyone go home.
And laugh this sport o'er by a country fire, Sir John and all.
Let it be so. Sir John, to Master Brooke, you yet shall keep your word. For he tonight shall lie with Mistress Ford.
In such manner did the covetous, lecherous, corpulent knight, Sir John Falstaff, become a cousin of cousined, and was made an ass of by the merry wives of Windsor. But fear not. Sir John was too arrant a knave by far for even this experience to make him either virtuous or thin. So, now you have heard the story of the Merry Wives of Windsor and Sir John Falstaff, a play that Queen Elizabeth commissioned me to write in the short space of 14 days. That, indeed, was a task of no mean proportions. Neither was the task of Charles Newton, who adapted my work for your great play's broadcast. I owe my thanks to him, and I owe them equally to Joseph Bell, who directed this production, and to the players who performed it. I doubt if it was better done when we played it first before Elizabeth and her court. And now, good sirs and fair ladies, good den to you all. The featured cast of today's performance included Wilma Walter as Falstaff, Kay Strozzi as Mistress Ford, Ara Gerald as Mistress Page, William Shelley as Ford, Charles Webster as Page, Agnes Moorhead as Dame Quickly, John McGovern as Pistol, Harry Neville as the host, Ian Martin and Peter Donald as the servants, William Podmore as Hugh Evans, Joan Warburton, Eunice Hill, Janice Gilbert, Dolores Gillen, Kingsley Colton, were the voices in the mass, and William S. Rainey acted as narrator in the role of Shakespeare. The music by Ernie Watson was conducted by Joseph Hunty. A Great Plays drama guide by Blevins Davis, who arranged for the series, is available to our radio audience through Columbia University Press at the cost of 25 cents. Send coin or money orders to Great Plays National Broadcasting Company, New York City, New York. The Great Plays drama guide contains a summary of the plot, sketch of the author's life, and pertinent facts about each of the 30 plays of this series. Consult your local library for reading material on the remaining great plays of the series. Next Sunday, as our third Shakespeare production of this season, we will present a work that represents the great poet at his full maturity, The Tempest. This program has been presented as a public service by the National Broadcasting Company and the independent radio stations associated with the NBC networks, and came to you from the RCA Building, Radio City, New York.